SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, weekend preview. The last day of this fortnight odyssey in Central and Gulf Coast Florida. Started in Tampa, swung through Ocala, where I hooked up with Hammer for OBS, and then back down to the coast and here to Clearwater at National HBPA. We'll hear from Eric Hamelbeck before we wrap up, Mary Rampolini as well at Oaklawn and James Scully. But right now, Hammer joins us. Rick, boy, that was fun at Ocala.
It sure was. Some kind of wish I was still there, but... We had a good time. I'd say I want to thank you again for letting me sit at the big table with you on Monday for the entire show. It was real fun talking with the people on site and on the air with you, and really appreciate, makes you appreciate much more what you do every day. 3 hours of information and, you know, taking care of people out there and letting them know what's going on in the racing world, especially on site. So it was fun for me. It was fun for me to be in Ocala alone, but then when you showed up, it was even better. So thank you for that.
No, not at all. And you know, for you, there's been, although we couldn't get you to NHC, that was the one stopover that didn't come to pass, because your obligations the last 15, 16 years, even longer, really. You go back to the origins of your career in racing offices after you got out of University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program, and it's nice for you. I can tell how refreshing it is, you know, to be in one place and then have all of these different people. I mean, it was timely given the West Coast horsemen that were at the sale, and that included Peter Ertin and Paul Phil D'Amato and Jerry Hollendorfer, and who else? There were a couple others, but.
We had Peter Miller and Little Red Feather crew, Billy Koch.
Yep, Billy Koch.
And Gary Fenton was there. And, I mean, just there was a lot of people run into, a lot of people on the East Coast as well. Before we go real quick, I got one quick question for you. Half hour, you played a song, So It Goes. And it didn't sound like Dave Edmunds in the Rock Pile. So who was that?
No, that was Dave Edmunds.
It was. Okay. I was trying to put his voice to it, but then it sounded a little bit older than that. But yeah, okay. Dave had been in the Rock Pile. They were pretty good. They tried to change rock and roll, to tell you the truth, and they came along pretty good. Anyway, I was the
Nick Lowe
with that.
Nick Lowe in there too, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Those two formed Rock Pile probably about 35 years ago, and good sound. Anybody that missed them, look them up. But yeah, it was very good in Ocala. And. And good to see. I might, since you're like a roadster now, you know, I'd be like to maybe join you a couple times on the road now. You're right. I have a little bit more freedom since I got let go here at Santa Anita, which, kind of puts me in a unique position as far as what's going on here, where, things come up. I usually try to personally wait 24 hours when a curveball hits you, and take a little breather. I think that's a good thing to do for a lot of people in this situation. I although I'm not working there, I still have a lot of friends and people that I came to know and trust and talk things through with. So I was literally on the phone 8 to 10 hours yesterday with just people calling and wanting to talk and just discuss the situation and the whole scheme of things. I think, uncertainty is the devil's friend in this situation. A lot of people just wondering where this is going to go and, why they were consulted in the first place. But like I said, we'll sit back and wait a little bit. I can't say a whole lot, as you mentioned on the top of the show. I know more than I should, but we'll hold that in for the right time to let it out. But you know, like I said, people are just more concerned with what's happening, what's going to happen with the breakdown yesterday morning. You know, it's just a terrible situation here. I mean, we talked about last week that the news cycle would go through, and you figure, you know, with the college thing and a couple of airplanes going down, but no, this led the news at noon yesterday, and it led the news at 6 o'clock as well. So there's a lot of eyes on what's going on out there, and this just has to stop at some point. It's just beyond the realm of statistics. So they're trying to do everything they can. Everyone out there cares and is trying to do the right thing, and that's what people need to know. Your guest this morning with Steve Criss and the rest of them and Jay Priven have some good questions and some good concerns. They've made some very good comments. I want to direct some people to the TDN, Thoroughbred Daily News, which Bill Finley has a little follow-up. There's two articles in there, one more factual and one more opinionated, with Bill Finley asking a series of questions that are very poignant, very, you should take a look at that. I think those are some of the questions that are on people's minds, and you can make some decisions. But some of the stuff will be hashed out soon. I think there's a horseman's meeting today behind closed doors, which would obviously they will discuss this situation. I believe that something like this, when it deals with medication, especially when it's altered, has to be cleared by the horseman's group here in California, which legally is the TOC, the Thoroughbred Owners of California. There is a trainers group, the CTT, but they're not the, quote, official horseman's group that is on record as having to approve things like this. So that will be taken care of or discussed. As you mentioned, also next Thursday, the 21st, there will be a CHRB meeting at Santa Anita. I believe it's at Santa Anita. That was already previously scheduled. There's a lot of rules as far as calling emergency meetings about who people present and what they can say and what they can't say. So this meeting comes along rather timely. I think it'll be very well attended. I think I'm going to make an appearance myself just to see live what's going on. So there'll be a lot of stuff going on there. The CHRB, the racing board, will have had about a week to digest this and talk to Rick Arthur, the equine medical director here at Santa Anita, who is will probably have a lot of input in how and this stuff will be implemented, to what degree it's implemented, and things like that. So racing is, I believe, still scheduled to continue next Thursday, the 22nd, in what fashion, or not, excuse me, Friday. What fashion, we're not sure yet. So these are some of the things that the horsemen will talk about, and I'm sure we'll have a few more things come out as that goes. But, I tell you, since I've been let go, it's been a little over 3 months. I slept well every night, but, I didn't sleep well last night. I can say that just from a lot of the concerns that I had to, was dealing with people. Yep. And not dealing with them, but talking to people just about the situation. It's something that's, could be major, and that we want it to go in the right direction. You know, personally, the racetrack, it just kind of had some kind of crazy thing how you think back. And, I grew up out here, and, Santa Anita was, well, Hollywood Park was actually the first track I went to, but spent a lot of time at Santa Anita through the years, moved away, and lo and behold, I come back here and work here. And, what's crazy about racetracks themselves, how they, I don't know. They're a building, but they have a personality, and they actually become part of you. Unlike a football stadium or a baseball stadium, the racetrack is kind of like a friend. You know, when you go visit your friend, you go visit the racetrack. It kind of makes you feel good being there, and so it's more it's a comfort zone. It's like, and the thought or even the notion that could possibly go away, whatever it really does hit home for me, and obviously a lot more people. But it's So it's a lot more. It's a lot more than you can imagine being in the middle of it. And anyway, we'll wait a little bit. I know you're going to talk to Cassidy. Maybe you'll talk to him on Monday after the horsemen have got together and see what they come up with. And just hope that, you know, kind of cooler heads prevail and everybody sits back a little bit and talks this thing through and communicates, because that's, as we've talked about through this whole situation, communication is big. People want to be informed and informed correctly and not go by what they saw on Twitter or actually find out news on Twitter. They'd like to be involved in the decision making, and hopefully that will carry on as we you know, get through this. There's just so many ramifications, but I'm going to give them a little time to sort themselves out before we make any drastic comments.
Agreed. And, you know, Hammer, you've, as a racing official and somebody who has had to institute, you know, any number of initiatives and changes when it comes to, you know, things that have morphed over the years in the game, you know as well as anybody out there what it takes to, you know, to make the kind of, I mean, we referenced cultural change, like in New York, what happened in New York, and how, you know, after some initial, and I had Alan Foreman earlier, who was on the task force, once everybody was able to digest what had transpired, which is very hard when you're right in the middle of it, in the miasma of it, everybody came aboard. And we were discussing actually last night at dinner, one of the things that, you know, that had been a cultural change included jockeys and the reaction by owners and trainers when jocks used to go to the gate and tell a track vet, the starters, and say, you know, this horse is not warmed up great. I don't like the way he feels. And, you know, historically, a lot of that was shrugged off. And, you know, we talk about what the industry's done to shift dynamics to protect horses and the riders. That's one of the shifts. And now, after, you know, first some consternation, maybe the first couple of months that it happened, now when a jock shows up behind the gate and says, I don't like the way this horse warmed up, they scratch. And everybody accepts it. And that was a cultural change. And so there's those kinds of nuance. But the knee-jerk reaction and the particularly the deflection involved in this, you know, the way in which the last 24 hours evolved. You do things at the racetrack that you bring people together and you explain a plan and let's do this and we need everybody aboard. That has not been going on at that location for months on end, and it doesn't still seem to be going on.
Well, like we've talked about, you know, it's communication. It solves a lot of problems.
That's right. We talked about that.
We talked of it, you know, months ago about other situations, and it's to say I think it could be improved out there. And, you know, you mentioned the scratching of the gates. I got to tell you, it's been 10, 15 years here when we here at California have taken a stance quietly and just internally that as far as scratching goes, whether it be by a jock on the track or a trainer has a problem with a surface change, anything, that there's no questions asked. I do have to admit that I was a little bit, you know, I get a little perturbed that, you know, sometimes, you know, being the position I was in as far as some of these, you know, scratches when the horse was fine, but they didn't, you know, worried about it. But I slowly morphed into the realization that, hey, you know what, if the connections don't feel with that horse, and when I mean connections, I mean anybody associated with the horse, with the rider, the owner, the trainer, if they're not 100% sure that this horse is physically ready to perform in his best fashion that day, and they want to scratch the horse, you know what? Scratch him. And there's not any pushback here by the stewards I know There wasn't when I was there, and I'm sure there still isn't. And you know, we've been in that mode for a while. I mean, we never discouraged any one of those people that I mentioned from scratching a horse, and you know, never got down on them, and that's just the way it was. You want to scratch? Guess what? You're scratching, and guess we'll come back in another few days and put him when he's ready to go, and would rather have the horse run at 100% when all the connections feel that that's way. So there has been some, you know, protocols here over the years that let those horses out. So I don't want them to think that, oh my gosh, they don't do anything like this out there. We've been doing it for years and years.
No, I'm just years. Yeah, I'm using it as an example of a cultural, you know, of a cultural change. And it did, because we were not in that mode at that time.
No, we weren't. And like I mentioned, you know, I was, you would go in to talk to the stewards, and you know, how do you let this horse out? You know, how does he know it's going to rain or not going to rain? And then it finally hit me one day. It's, wow, this horse is much more valuable when he's 100%. You know, whenever that may be, a week or 10 days later than he is today, just to have him in there to say we ran another horse. So it does take some realization that this is the way it has to be. And you know, once you get there, it didn't take that long to get there. But this has been going on for a long time here. We've been doing pre-race checks, and that's what is, you know, a lot of these things have been going on quietly. We worked together. When I was there, we worked together with Rick Arthur. He would give me a list of some horses that may need to have a second look at. We would go over it, absolutely do it. And I got to say, the horsemen were all for it. We'd, you know, maybe go a horse that was off for, you know, 6-8 months. They would go by, you know, 2 weeks before they were thinking about running. You know, we had a list. They would go by, just pull them out, look at them, and then maybe next week we'll look at them again. So a lot of this stuff has been going on already behind the scenes. It's not, doesn't make the front pages, but that's the way we like to do it. Just you know, getting things done. So, like I mentioned, a lot of this stuff's been going on. This is a major change that affects not just Santa Anita but the entire industry. So I guess I will wait a little bit and see how further reactions are you know, take up the discussion again after we see the next step. But,
well,
hey,
yeah.
What they split the race at Oaklawn? How about that for a deflection?
I know. Give us some thoughts, Hammer, and you know, obviously for the West Coast Horsemen, this was a lifeline.
It was, and I want to really make it clear out there that, you know, Oaklawn did not have to do this at all. This is granted they have the money to use, and they, you know, I looked at the races. They had 19 horses. If they had decided to just run a full gate of 14, the five horses that would not have gotten in were a couple of maidens and a couple of that by money earned. It would not have affected the race. It would have been one. It would have been the best 3-year-old non Triple Crown race in years. Believe me, if all these were put together, and there was 8 California horses that entered, and only two of those would not have gotten in. One a maiden. So it wouldn't have been the end of the world, and that's why we really have to commend Oaklawn Park for stepping up and really saying, hey, you know what, we're gonna give them 2 races, we're gonna put up some money, and you know, this notion, I you know, read a couple things on the internet, this notion of Baffert calling up and hey, you got to put me apart and this, you know, you give some way too much credit for this kind of stuff. There's rules out there that are adhered to, and for an example, if you look that day, they split a maiden race. They actually split a couple maiden races, and if you notice, you know, there's trainers in each hand. It's a rule, or it's, I think it's a house rule at most places, that when a trainer enters 2 and the race splits, you split them apart. So it wasn't a phone call that got it done. It's normal procedure at any race at most racetracks around the country. And so let's get that out of the way. And you know, they had to deal with the Asmussen thing where he entered 6, and you know, made a little mistake and put 4 and 1 and 2 in the other. But Jay covered that just right with the jockeys and everything else after it was already drawn. The stewards, because it's not a rule in the rule book, it's kind of a house rule like it is here. about splitting them up. They just thought that was the right thing to do, and that's their call. They could have redrawn, but they decided not to, and I don't think any harm was done in those situations. But you get to see like I said, there's eight California horses there, so you get to see what the 3-year-olds have to go through out here, who they have to go through year in and year out. You know, meaning me and Bob Baffert and Jerry Hollendorf are pretty much involved every year, and then you got some newbies out there like Richard Mandela on the 3-year-old sale. So like the mob situation, all of a sudden he finds himself with a couple of horses that might be headed east for the Derby. So that's kind of neat. But as we look at it, we got the Azaries, which I heard you guys talk about earlier. I mean, that race come up great. I mean, you kind of want these all to finish in a blanket finish, so they all return for the Apple Blossom in a few weeks. Midnight Bijou shows up with a little more recency, and once again, these are preps for races going down the road. So she's already come back and done all right. Doesn't need to go late. Elate is a really, really, really nice filly, and I think Bill, you know, is not one to kind of give him a prep race. I think when they're ready to run, they're ready to run. So if she gets out there and gets a nice, easy lead, which she probably could if she wants to, or at least be towards the front, she'll be tough. And Eskimo Kisses, if she runs back to her Alabama, could explode here a little bit. But once again, these are prep races, and you really don't want anybody to win by 10 because you want them to come back again in a couple weeks. And we talked with Mark earlier in the week about Shamrock Rose, and when he mentioned that Shamrock Rose is going the Azari, I picked up my head and said, wow, this is pretty wild. So this horse has tried two turns, won two turns before. I hadn't really realized that until I checked the PPs, but, of course, the Breeders' Cup winner going 7 furlongs, a late-running sprinter. We'll see how she does against this company, but a good start back for her. So that's a great race. The Rebel, the first edition, Improbable, probably goes through him. It's hard not to think that. The outside poster shouldn't harm him too much. I'm really interested to look at Galilean. Calbred's been running against nothing but state breds out here. I looked up the horses been running against, really not a whole lot to crow about, but, you know, he can't predict that. I mean, who he's going to run against. His numbers are good, and I'm actually interested to see how good this horse is. So if you want to take a shot, I think today's the day. You're going to get a little bit of a price today. Once if he shows something good, I don't think prices will go down. But I think those two are there, and if I had to pick one to throw in as a little bit of a price, I like the local horse, Longshot Toddy, one of the Steve Asmussen horses with one of my favorites, John Corp. But he looks to me to like the track a little bit, didn't run bad in the Southwest, so I look for him to show it a little bit. And the Dick Mandela horse you guys talked about on the rail, who knows how good he is. It's tough looking at horses coming off the slop, so we'll keep an eye on him. The second division is headed by, obviously, the 2-year-old champion, Breeders' Cup winner, Game Winner. You know, once again, if you're looking for a time to pick a shot to get him beat, maybe it's this one. You know, maybe the travel, maybe this. If you're looking for a reason, though, maybe we try and beat him. Our Brain Trust, Mark Cassie horse, coming off the Withers, he looks sneakily good. He's going to be a price. And then Omaha Beach, who all of a sudden is jumping up on everybody's Derby list. Haskin had him on there for a while and talked to him a little bit about the horse. And I flash back way back to the Oak Tree meet, the fall meet at Santa Anita. And he had just run second in a race on the turf. And Dick Mandela came in to me about a week later and said, hey, can you put up another maiden race on the turf? And I said, well, we just ran one, you know, last week. He goes, yeah. He goes, I got this horse that I'd really like to get into the Breeders' Cup turf. And I'm thinking, okay, whatever. And it turned out to be this horse. And that always stuck in my head. I mean, that's not like him to try and force the issue. And then as it turned out, obviously, the race that came up later in the meet, and he missed it and missed the Breeders' Cup. But for him to talk Breeders' Cup after a horse's second start on the turf here and then watch him explode when he got on the dirt, that's always been in the back of my mind. So, I mean, this horse could be sneaky good. and we'll keep an eye on him. But as usual, three-year-old races this time of year go through the Baffert Barn. And like I said, you get to see what the trainers here go through. So this is very interesting dual races, and we'll enjoy watching Oakland Park this week.
Hammer, I really appreciate it. And as we wrap up, I'll mention, don't forget about the 3rd and the 4th early on that card tomorrow at Oaklawn. And there's a maiden special where the Monomoy girl brother, Cowboy Diplomacy, comes back for the second start, ran well in the first try. And there's also an Asmussen plug and play. Feels like the two of them who are the favorite, Cowboy Diplomacy and the third choice, Plug and Play. The Sims horse is okay, Royal Mesa, who's the second choice. And then there's that heavyweight allowance where Comedian and Desmond on paper are hooking up. But note that Last Judgment, the people keep asking, where's the Pletcher three-year-olds? Here's another one of these Pletchers that are popping up late in the proceedings, and Last Judgment was the Pletcher to be named later that had been considering a division of the Rebel, and instead Pletcher takes the conservative route with Last Judgment, and I would take a look at this congrats cult, and we'll see what happens here. He's obviously in deep water facing both Desmond and Comedian, Baffert and Asmussen, but there's a lot going on this Oaklawn card, so looking forward to it.
There is. I mean, they split a three-year-old maiden race going short, they split a three-year-old maiden race going long, and
yep,
they have this to the two Rebels, so this is a lot of three-year-olds. A lot of horses you're going to see down the road are going to come out of these races here today. And I forgot to mention Desmond was there, and I agree with you with the Last Judgment. So they take the road. They take the different road here, put them in the allowance race. If they're good enough, they build up a little confidence, and they still got one more shot in the next round to finish first or second to get in the Derby if you're good enough. So rather than throw them against some of the heavy heads in the Rebel, let's see how good we are, and if you perform real, real good, let's go back into the Bluegrass or the Arkansas Derby or another one of those races. So you still have one more chance to get those points, because the points seem to be a little bit they're not as going to be as much to get in this year, and so some of these horses might sneak in there. So it was just a great card there for 3-year-olds, and there's going to be a lot of horses coming out of here that you're going to see in June, July, and August, for sure. So, okay, once again, thanks to Oaklawn for putting on the show this weekend and taking all those horses in. We need something like that to, keep it going. So thanks to them, and thanks to everybody in Ocala who took care of us, Tom Ventura and Jimmy and all those guys. It was great there. So we'll look for you on the road soon again, and good luck, everyone, this week. And
away they go. Rick Hammerly, everybody, and Hammer, I appreciate it. Let's stay right here because James Scully is standing by, and I want to get right to James. We still got quite a bit to do yet between now and noon. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Quick review, anything going on the TwinSpires side of things, the blog roll, obviously, gearing up when it comes to Maidan and Dubai World Cup in a couple of weeks and so forth. What else you got?
Well, we with the $50,000 Road to the Kentucky Derby Challenge is going on. It's going to run through the Arkansas Derby and the Lexington Stakes on April 13th every weekend. $15, your first $15 win bet on those Kentucky Derby prep races. You're going to get shares for a top three finish, similar to the point system. So at the end of it, we're going to give away $50,000 to our players. Also have we have a bad luck board that we're doing, giving some back to the players at TwinSpires. And we're going to have Vance Hansen will be at Oaklawn Park. So watch for his coverage both on BrisNet and TwinSpires.com blog.
Excellent. Quick Kentucky Derby report. Your recap from last week, what were you impressed with? Who disappointed?
Well, I was impressed with Tacitus or Tacitus or however people are saying it. But one thing about it was that race doesn't really come back fast. But you look at it, he got the same 95 for speed rating that Code of Honor did. And it's a situation this year where I think a lot is being put onto this final round of preps because just looking at those last two races, I mean, both winners and one of the runner-ups, it was their two-turn debut. So we're having a lot of horses that aren't going to have a lot of stakes experience. It looks like a lot of up-and-coming horses, and really makes for an exciting 6 weeks leading into the Derby.
Excellent. Let's dive into this weekend and your thoughts going in. First of all, we'll do the last thing first. Any of the last second horses for today?
Yes, I've got the in the sixth race today. JP Gladys, number 6-1 on the morning line. Third start off the layoff. Going to get the
where?
Place to run at. So
where?
That's at Oaklawn today. Race 6, number 6.
Very good. 6 and 6 for today for James. That's become a very popular segment of the show. go ahead and dive into Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bob Baffert had a game winner, made his fifth two-year-old champion. One of them, Vindication, didn't run again after the juvenile. The other one, Midshipman, was transferred to Saeed Bensur. So but his other two to race both came back in the Rebel and won at American Pharoah and looking at Lucky. And that's what game winner's trying to do today. I do think that, you know, I mean, both horses, both game winner and improbable for Baffert, are going to be odds on, and there's not a lot of, like, you know, viable win options in either race. But I do think game winner is facing perhaps the most dangerous challenger in my opinion in Omaha Beach. Really like how he's come along in his last two dirt races for Mandela, brings strong brisk speed and pace numbers, and showed tough ability last time that really can come in handy in this race. Game winner, you know, one thing about him last year, he made his debut on August 18th. He won the juvenile, won three grade ones after that, and over a 76-day period, he averaged 19 days between races, sort of like Justify-esque, and, you know, coming back from a lengthy layoff, got 9 works, but he's worked him real fast those last couple works, at least it looks like to me. He's really been drilling to get ready, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of trip he gets, whether he's fresh or not, because he has shown speed in some of those starts. So definitely going to be capable of winning, and if Omaha Beach doesn't continue to step forward for Mandela, game winner is the most likely winner. In the improbable race, the real question with him is, you know, perhaps that outside post. He's got, not only does he's got the speed horse, number 7, Classy John, to his inside. Galleon's one spot inside him. So just be interesting to see if he gets floated a little wide into that first turn, because he's either broken from inside post or been inside, you know, in short fields in all three starts. This is the first time he's really facing this kind of potential challenge. But to me, he has these rivals more over the barrel than game winner does against Omaha Beach in my eyes. And, you know, his Los Alamitos Futurity wasn't only fast, but I love the fact that Van Dyke, when improbable, was leaving the starting gate. I thought he was a little bit sluggish. He shook his hands at him, hustled him a little bit, and he took off into that first turn. And instead of just letting him run, Van Dyke took a hold of him.
Yep.
And reeled him in. And I really thought that was just a valuable educational experience for that horse. He appears to be training great. He looks like he's the goods to me. And at a mile of 16th, I don't see him losing.
Well, and the thing about the speed inside of him, in a lot of ways, I don't think it's a negative. I think it's a positive. Let Galilean and Classy John duel. He's going to drop over, and he'll be sitting behind those two speeds. I mean, he's never challenged for a lead. I think that this is, in a lot of ways, I mean, I was taken by him at Churchill, and then I was lucky enough to be at Los Al for the Futurity, and was, I mean, just been enamored from him immediately. And I think he's, when we come out of this Saturday evening, he's, you know, he's your leader in the clubhouse going into the 9 furlong races. What else you got, James?
Well, I'll just say in this Essex handicap, and I heard Nick talking about it, I mean, before, I see Dalmore as potential lone speed here. I mean, he's run two sloppy races over two sloppy tracks, lost by about 100 lengths. Those races are complete throwouts. Two starts back, that Sunshine Million. Jay's way to speed him to the lead that day. But there's nobody like that horse in this race. He's inside. Horses like Snapper Sinclair and Fine Expectations are more than willing to sit just right off the speed. I see Cohen, who's 23% at Oaklawn, sending him there. And I really like those two races before the last one. That Sunshine Millions gets beat less than a length. In the Richard Small three starts back, you know, he's 3.5 lengths up on the lead. So he's going to sit that same trip. Both those races, too, are a mile and an eighth. He's better at a mile and a 16, four for 10 at the distance. And with a potential dream trip, he's got an upset chance in that Essex.
My problem, I think there's other fast early horses in there that I don't see how he gets an easy lead if he wants it. Isn't Chris and Dave the most likely to get out there?
Definitely has, has shown, you know, but I mean, he's the kind of type too that, you know, to me, he's not a need the lead type where if Dalmore gets to the front, he might just have a short advantage, but I'm just not anticipating a fast pace by any means and just the potential to steal it there.
Very good. Is that it for the day?
Yeah, that's, I will just say the first race tomorrow. Number two, My Legacy, 9-2 on the morning line. That was a really fast race. I really liked his effort showing speed that day. He was a street boss colt. He was totally overlooked at the 12-1, I think, last time. And look for him to move forward. I'll be playing him in the opener at Oaklawn tomorrow.
I like it. And boy, Asmussen just absolutely just stacked in these maiden races. You're picking My Legacy. You'd look down to Plug and Play, the obvious candidate against Cowboy Diplomacy, and then he's got Comedian as well as Nacogdoches as well in the other one, and then he's also got Rotation the fifth. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you guys mentioned it. I mean, $600,000 being offered between four maiden and two allowance races. So, I mean, Top Pletcher doesn't ship anybody in for the Rebel, but those race four and race six are almost like stake races, you know, with $100,000 purses. So he's shipping a pair of horses into running those races, and makes sense. I mean, running for a lot more money than at Gulfstream or anywhere else.
I'm just counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 maidens in the four races for Steve Asmussen. And the ones in the nightcap going 6 in the 11th, they're first-time starters. But the rest have shown talent. And, wow. So they could get a boost coming out of this big Rebel card, which focuses on three-year-olds for the most part, mostly males. And obviously, the girls with the...
Oh, yeah, what a dynamite race. I mean,
yeah,
you know, Azari. I think Tappa, a little bit of a look in that Azari,
right.
And she's going to be on the lead, but just can really envision a late sitting a good trip. I'm rooting for her, and I just think it's great because the Monomoy girl, you could have all these four grade one winners in the Azari, and the Distaff division looks like it has more depth than it, potentially more depth than it has in recent years.
Well, wait till we get to the Apple Blossom, on the Racing Festival of the South, which highlights.
Right, and then this year it's the day after the Arkansas Derby. Yeah,
I know, I know. A little bit of a twist. I appreciate it, and James, best of luck. James_Scully111, and James and everybody at the Blog Roll, and update on EJ3. By the way, how's Eddie 3?
Yeah. He's supposed to go home today, got out of the ICU a couple days ago, and spoke to Ed yesterday. He's making good progress, and they're hopeful, and he's on the road and getting better. And thanks for asking about him, and wishing EJ the best.
Absolutely. And when we get I'll save my admonishment of Ed for next week, because he's going to get beaten about the head and face when he joins me next for his ridiculous what he said about Tracy Gans was really inappropriate, and I'm not going to let that go unaddressed. I appreciate it, James.
All right, good luck, Steve.
turning our attention and our last 8 minutes, 7-8 minutes, happy to get Eric Hamelbeck in to close out the visits here. And Eric, we're always facing any number of challenges in the game, and most of them are apparent and are front and center. Others come out of nowhere, and certainly what we have been facing at Santa Anita, first a public relations disaster and maddening circumstance, now we face a new and outlandish I don't even know how
to describe it.
Yeah,
right.
I've been describing it. At least got a respite from it for an hour, but as we handicapped. But your thoughts about what transpired yesterday?
Well, thanks, Steve. Let me first say, as far as closing out our convention, I think we had a great convention here with the National HPPA. We had a tremendous lineup of speakers, panelists, and brought a lot of thought-provoking aspects. Again, I really tried to focus on how we can do things better. And obviously it was a tough week, and there were a lot of circumstances outside of the control, but we tried to finish up the convention, and again, I thank you for being here. But yeah, Santa Anita, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts, Steve, a lot of thoughts that I think I've shared with my good friend Alan Balch at the California Thoroughbred Trainers. I know my board is very anxious to put something out as far as a statement, but obviously we want to be cognizant of everything going on. But I think first and foremost, and I think the horsemen in California obviously agree that we're going to do anything in our power to keep the horses safe. It's what we should do. It's what we will do. I don't think a horseman in California is going to tell you anything different. But when we look at the new house rules that were brought about by Belinda, of course, I know to me Mrs. Stronach is someone else, but for Belinda, and obviously I have a long relationship with Mr. and Mrs. Stronach, but those rules, and I think basically they are popular talking points. I think they are personal opinions of some pretty loud voices, but most importantly, and I hope everyone understands, it's ignoring science and facts. I mean, there is, again, nothing we are going to do more than put the health of the horse first. But when you look at what they put out, and I can't speak for what autopsies may have been done on some of the other tragedies, but ultimately we have a mechanism in place that is trying to get to the bottom of the problem. And for them to ignore what I consider a very major factor in some issues due to weather with the surface, I think you effectively, having put out that House rule decree, you have blamed it on medication, and there is no facts to prove it, and I can't sit here and tell you at this point. I don't have the facts in front of me, and none of my board members do, but again, very, very recently, and then I'm just going to pick on Lasix for a second. Very recently, there was a very good Q&A in a certain publication within our industry, and Dr. Bramlage dispelled that, and this was before the decree from Belinda. So, again, I think that, management, Santa Anita management in particular, they've done the right thing by closing the track, and it should remain closed. I don't think that there's any question about that, and nobody disagrees with that. But it's also the one common denominator in all the issues that have occurred. To step away from Lasix, I would also say that if you really look at it analytically, and I really appreciated Bill Finley's piece in the TDN, the House rules that were implemented, they don't address the problem, and they certainly wouldn't, if in place the day before, Princess Lily B breaks down, those initiatives would have done nothing.
Correct.
That's
the amazing part about this discussion.
Yeah,
Steve Christman said it perfectly. I mean, it's creating a distraction and it's addressing something that has nothing to do.
Right.
I mean, in and of themselves. I started my own this the first hour. My first thing I said was, listen, in and of itself, this is always a good discussion to have.
Absolutely.
And there is potential long-term for American racing. You know, I think one of the things that gets lost in these moments, when people start trumpeting about meeting the international standards, except there's one, not just one difference, there's many differences.
Many differences.
They're almost everywhere else in the world, they're running on turf.
Right.
As opposed to the majority of our racing, which is on the dirt, which is a more stressful racing demand. The fact that almost everywhere else in the world, they're not the horses aren't housed in
that's
racetracks
right.
with bales of hay stored above them. They're out in yards with ventilation. It's a much different issue. The demands on the lungs of our horses. You're trying to force oranges into the apple juice. It's just a preposterous. It's an unequal footing. It's a
it is.
Different.
It,
these
it
are
is.
Different entities.
Yeah, and I've somewhat tongue in cheek described it as people trying to compare oranges and tangerines. They're similar. Absolutely, they are. And they're both orange, but ultimately, it isn't the same. And I will continue to quote this because I read it. But two things. One, not too long ago, the BHA announced that they were going to increase their testing to 8,500 samples. Well, oh, by the way, they run close to 12,000 races. So is that what we want to be in?
We want to just test two-thirds of our races.
Yeah, we don't want to test every horse.
We're not going to test every winner here?
No,
oh, so we should cut back
exactly.
to meet their standard.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. You know, and that part is very frustrating. And then the other thing that is... Again, in the outside realm of our world, is any breakdown is tough to talk about. Any, and I've been on the end of those shanks, and many people that are making some of these decisions have not. So when I tell you that other countries outside of the United States do not count breakdowns the way we do, okay? So you know we get the comparison quite frequently and quite often of the breakdown rate per race or one horse per thousand starts. And if you look at the way they calculate euthanasia in other countries, they do not count it unless they put the horse down on the racetrack. You know, I've had scientists tell me that, well, there's comparison and they're comparable. But the fact remains is very simple. We do it in the United States, I think, the right way. In order to gather big data, you want to put that horse down, or if you have to put that horse down, I apologize, if you have to put it down within the next 48 hours or 72 hours of the race, then we count it. But other countries don't do that.
And of course, we've only got our data from the equine injury database.
Correct.
For just about the last 8-9 years. We have no idea if, in fact, our breakdown numbers are half of what they were 30 years ago because they weren't kept.
They weren't kept.
So we have no idea if we're even further along in this process than we know.
Correct.
Eric, as always, I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
And I love being here. And where next year?
We're going to Oaklawn Park.
Very
excited.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey now.
Yeah.
Excellent. For Rebel Week. Rebel Week?
Yes, I believe it's Rebel Week.
Outstanding.
Well, I don't want to get quoted.
We just stole the thunder.
Correct.
All
right. That's
right. We'll work on it. Eric Hamelbeck, everybody, and listen, happy St. Patrick's Day. We got some Black 47 behind us. Funky Kaylee. It's been a crazy 12-day
yes.
adventure here in Florida for me. I will be home with my own Bridie tomorrow morning and back with you on Monday. And let's all support each other and keep a
Absolutely.
Level head.
Absolutely.
Good luck this weekend, everybody.
I'm alive. Thinking dirty, big glass of porter. Playing with cheese and me reels and me schweiz. Thinking of Bobby whenever I'm sober, which isn't too often, I have to confess. Take good care of the Mars Minor. Back love to your dad. And give the baby a great big kiss.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about